The Mathis twins are 28, and they grew up in the Douglas neighborhood of North Memphis. Their journey into the world of gangs started early. Brandon says their father abused them severely.
So that's how our story started. It started from us getting abused in the house. And because we wanted to hide the scars that we had on us, we started fighting people outside.
And all the while, gaining a reputation. Brian says it started out rather innocently.
From the age of 9 that we knew what it was and understood what was going on. And at the age of 10 is when we got active, just doing little runs here and there. And
the reason, a little run?
They call it putting in work. But at our age, we didn't look at it as putting in work because these were people we grew up with. Male figures, people we call our uncles, before letting us know whether we was fully a part of, just kind of had us doing minor things like that, like make a little dope run here and exchange and bring the money back, and they would give us money off that. They're no longer recruiting 15 and 16-year-olds.
That's Brandon.
Because at that time, from 12 to 16, a teenager has made up in their mind what they're going to do, what they want to do, or what they settle to do. But a third grader, second grader, first grader, their developing skills are very fresh. So if you can get them at their age, they can grow up into it. You feel what I'm talking about? So what they'll do is they're recruiting the younger ones. First of all, they got influence. Second of all, they can scare them half to death. You know what I mean? You picture, you got 15 boys, so they're going to jump you. Now, either you can take this whooping one time, or we're going to whoop you every day until you say you're going to get down. I mean, what you going to do? You like, yo, you can't, your mom just can't pick up and move into a whole nother city, a whole nother state. You know, in a situation like that, the child has to make a decision. Yo, I'm just going to roll with them and get rolled over. So they start rolling with them.
The twins rolled with them and quickly achieved rank, making them leaders within the ranks of the neighborhood Crips 111. Brian says their involvement peaked in the late 1990s and into the early 2000s. Then one night at the skating rink in Raleigh, everything changed.
9 of my peers came to me and they showed me a gun and they told me if anything go down that they would have my back. Now the strange thing was neither one of them knew what the other one said to me. So here it is, one night, 9 individuals tell me that if anything go down, they have my back. And I got into it with this guy, and we was walking outside, and the young lady I was talking to had 2 sisters, 7 and 9. And the guy began to shoot. But as he began to shoot, he started shooting toward the girls that were 7 and 9. So I picked him up and moved him out the way, and I started running toward him because in my mind, I'm thinking, wow, I just had 9 people tell me that if a situation like this go down, that they had my back. And I turned around to see all of them leaving me there by myself. And it did something to me because I'm thinking, wow, here I am staring death right in the face.
And then Brandon went into action.
I had a gun. The whole trip thing about it is that where I was standing there, I could have took the dude out like with a headshot, but I couldn't get to my gun. That's why I was like, I know everything is predestined. I mean, everybody that was there, even the police officer, he was there. He witnessed it because what I did, when the guy took off, I ran and started letting off my gun. But the guy was far. I mean, he was already gone. But I still had to leave that message like, yo, we got guns too. I think, was it the next day, Twin? It was on the news. It was, they call it the Raleigh Skate Land. A shootout, and that was us. But at that time, that's when I decided, I was like, yo, I could have took dude life, you know what I mean? Everybody knew who we was because we used to terrorize that neighborhood. Once I realized I was shot, I just laid there and I thought about, what if I'd have got shot in the head or the chest?
That night, Brian started thinking about leaving the gang.
I felt I was abandoned, and I felt like the same people that I was there for wasn't there for me. But the thing about a family is, just because a couple of individuals are not there for you, you just can't disband your whole family. And so with the wisdom that God had given me, I went to the person who I was down with, the people who I first affiliated myself with, not all of these soldiers, because gangs are ran like military. You have your generals, you have your lieutenants, and you just have the foot soldiers. Even though the foot soldiers left me there to die, I went to the people who put me down and let them know that I don't have a problem with affiliation. It's just that with that brush, that right there, when I was facing sure death, I couldn't see how they could protect me. I was in a situation where nobody protected me but God.
Brian doesn't credit his ability to communicate in convincing those above him to let him go.
I went to them from my heart, and I told them that I just want to see what life is like. They looked at me, and they looked at my brother, and they told me something that I'll never forget. They said that we have seen so many people die. We have seen so many people in this neighborhood that could have made it. He told us to promise him that we would do something with our lives. He said if we promise him that we would do something with our lives, then he would do this for us. So it was a mutual understanding that I wouldn't just abandon this and then throw my life away some other way. He looked at me and he said, little homie, make it. But when we make it, don't just make it for us. Make it for the hood. Make it for those. Because he said to himself, he don't know if he's going to live. He said, I don't know what my life is going to be, but I want to be able to say that, man, I helped somebody else make it.
Still, the road wasn't easy or straight. They were planning to get revenge on the shooter themselves without help from the gang, and they still lived in North Memphis. Again, Brian.
It doesn't work how people think it does. You just don't up and one day say you're going to be in a gang, and you don't up and one day say you're going to be out. It's a process to everything.
And Brandon found himself facing 30 years for taking a MATA bus hostage because of some gang rivalries. At first, he was like a peacock in jail, showing off and telling everyone who he was. Then,
and I started thinking about, like, yo, what am I really doing? Somebody let me read this article in the newspaper, and it was saying, it was from the Klansmen. It was like a letter that they sent out. They said, we want to thank you guys for doing our job because we no longer have to kill you. You're killing yourself at an alarming rate. So the only thing we had to do is sit back and watch you and then tell you thank you. My thing is, I'm not a racist person, but I'm just sitting here and I start analyzing. This is really going on. We are killing each other. We are killing ourselves.
Those words played in Brandon's mind and helped propel him to another way.
I don't want to say thing, but when we went on this Christian search within ourselves, people respect it. Because everybody have respect for God, you know what I mean? No matter who you are. People shouldn't be surprised that gang members pray. They pray. They believe in what they do. I mean, they go to church. They do all these different things because in their mind they want to do right. But in their situation, they got to do what they got to do.
The twins were moving away from gang life, but Brian says still felt they had unfinished business. And then one night,
my uncle called us and told us that he had all our friends, everybody in the church, and he wanted us to come there rap. And we was like, man, we're not finna go rap in no church. That's corny. You know, we weren't going to do that. But part of us thought about, since we're about to throw our lives away and kill this guy, let's see what our life would have been like had we tried to explore the music.
Since that day, the twins have not turned back. Instead, they help young men and women stay out of gang life, and they make music. Still, Brandon says their old neighborhood has gotten worse.
We living in trouble, and like in Douglas, the Bloods have taken over. I mean, that's, I call that Blood Nation. But when we was growing up, it was like, we called it a baby California. Five streets in that neighborhood was Crip. Three streets may have been VL, but the VLs were strong. They were all about their money. Then you had like four streets that would have been like GD. And then at that time, it was like maybe two streets that was Blood. Now you got all these different gangs in one neighborhood, and then you got a corner store right in the middle. You feel what I'm saying? And then you got people fighting for territory. You feel what I'm saying? It's like, yo, you don't come over here and bring this on our territory. We ain't gonna bring it on your territory.
And it's real tough growing up on those streets.
Young men are always challenged to be somebody. So if you can't be that Michael Jordan on the basketball court or that Michael Jackson on the dance floor in your neighborhood, you still have to be somebody. I thrived on being somebody that was respected.
Now the twins are respected for their work in the community. For WKNO News, I'm Candace Ludlow.